The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
It's Tuesday, the 20th of April, 2021. On the podcast today, Paul Hill discusses the clinical validation of Avacta's lateral flow test, which shows 100% clinical sensitivity. Also on the podcast, Glenn Goodman, former ITV News business correspondent and now the author of The Crypto Trader, covers this week's Bitcoin, blockchain, cryptocurrency news. We talk about the ridiculous valuations of most cryptos and whether there's a rollover happening. We've been saying this for weeks, but it looks like it's starting to happen. Plus, also on the podcast, I have two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours and the top five most red RNSs too. By the way, you can check out both these lists at voxmarket.co.uk. We'll see lots of the content. In fact, there's the individual podcast there, Paul Hill and myself talking about Avacta. There's an article on Gfinity, appoints former Apple executive board, second Apple heavyweight in the, since December now. And I don't know any other companies like that that has a small cap AIM stock with two ex-Apple heavyweights. Plus, 88 Energy highlights progress. There's an article in Union Jack Oil as well, and Avacta, and of course, our COVID-19 index. Biggest rise of the day, of course, is Avacta, up 10% at 258. Biggest faller, Hemogenics again, down 8% to 3.5. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now with breaking news, I'm so enthusiastic this morning, Paul Hill, equity analyst, full-time investor. You all right, fella?
Yeah, morning, Justin.
I got to say, on Slack there, you said, we've got to talk about this. It's amazing news. Breaking news from Avacta. It's very big news. Big news. Huge news. Let's get it out there. Let's get it out there. I love your enthusiasm. Did you have any sleep last night, Paul?
Well, I'll tell you, mate, this is absolute. We've talked about it on our fortnightly video cast, that what the world needs in terms of sort of context is a breakthrough vaccines. It needs blockbuster testing and also needs therapeutics. And I think this morning we could well have got news on a game-changing testing development that's come out of Avacta.
It's Avacta's lateral flow test, antigen lateral flow test. It's been passed all high clinical validation for their platforms. So explain what this is, essentially. What does it mean?
Well, what it basically means, at the moment, the UK, let's just use the UK as an example, yeah. But it equally applies the rest of the world, and I'll come on to that later. But in the UK, we're currently doing, as of Sunday, I was just looking at the stats, we did 1.5 million lateral flow tests in the UK. That was before the schools went back, and before, I believe, Boris Johnson has offered everybody in the country the ability to have two lateral flow tests each week. But what we've got with the standard of testing so far is that the lateral flow tests we're currently using are okay.
Yeah.
They don't have that many false positives, apparently, but they have lots of false negatives. And what that means is if somebody is infectious, and what you get is that when you catch COVID, then you have an incubation period. And in that incubation period, you can carry it and transmit it, okay? And the answer to that is, unfortunately, is a lot of the rapid flow tests fail to pick up that. And why is that important even after we've had vaccinations? Well, frankly, what it happens is that if you get a nasty variant circulating the country that's incubating, you don't want people transmitting it and making it infectious, because it's going to basically potentially harm people who have even been vaccinated. So what we need is a super accurate, sensitive and specificity test, i.e. that actually identifies accurately false positives, all the positives, true positives, and accurately, importantly, true negatives. And this is the result that has come out from Avacta. It basically said this morning it's got, I think it was a 98%
clinical sensitivity for samples, yeah.
Yeah, 98% on the true positives, but 99% on the true negatives. I mean, that is just flabbergastingly good. I mean, what that says, it's balanced, i.e. it does both, and it does it within 20 minutes, which is, again, better than the standard of care, which is 30 minutes. And then equally, as I just know from when I've spoken to CEO Alistair Smith before, it's easier to use because it uses the anterior part of the nasal passage rather than having to jam a swab really deep into your nose or to the back of your tonsils to be able to get a sample. So it's much easier for things like children to use as well. So this wins on all three of those counts, i.e. on accuracy, ease of use, and on speed. And what was also really interesting was that they did this in a European site in the testing and challenged against two other existing lead tests, and it had better results, better accuracy than those two tests. And why I think also it's significant in Europe is because we come down to the CE mark when it comes to commercialization. This is clearly something that Europe desperately needs. The UK needs it, but the Europeans will bite your arm off for it because they're struggling to vaccinate their country. I mean, they want to get their economy up and operational like we do, and they want to allow people to go on holiday and to socialise, to go out to restaurants, and they can't because they're in lockdown at the moment. So what we're going to need going forward is a rapid, super accurate, easy to use lateral flow test. And if I've seen anything which has come out of the results, you know, this morning, this is it.
Are they at the forefront of this? Do they have a lot of competition in this area now, or what?
Yeah, of course they do. They have lots of competition, but they are the best in class. They just proved that. From this trial, from two. They did a challenge test against two other, and they had better accuracy. And what it does, we're almost saying 100, and Alistair mentions it in the announcement, for what is clinically defined as somebody who is infectious, they actually had 100% sensitivity or accuracy of 100% for all that. So what we're saying is that if you want to go out to a nightclub, a bar, or you want to go and watch a sporting event or whatever like that, you can absolutely test everybody going through that gate within 20 minutes or before they arrive or whatever like that, that they are not infectious. They might still be infected. That's still a possibility. But when it comes to transmitting, they're not going to transmit. So it means the safety of other people who are attending that event or at work is going to be assured. And that's why it's important, is that it gets the economy working again. It gets people socialising, holidaying, partying, going out and enjoying themselves. And just the volume of this, yeah? I mean, when the schools go back, we say we're doing 1.5 million lateral flow tests a day, as of Sunday. The schools go back, that's 20 million a week, potentially, of lateral flow tests, plus any others. And the next steps are to get CE marking.
I was going to say, wait, how fast can they commercialise this now? What happens?
I'm sure the government, having seen these results, want to get it as fast as possible. The partner they're using is MoLogic, who frankly already have CE marking and have already used and manufacturing the Clear Blue pregnancy test. They know how to do this. These guys are not sort of like, you know, just Johnny come latelys. These are a very big and established firm who know how to manufacture it. So the next step is just to finish off that CE marking and then to really launch into commercial. And it all depends on how quickly they can ramp up. But I mean, Alistair in the announcement said he's looking for sales. I mean, you know, maybe in May after the CE marking straight away, which says to me, even though there was no contracts announced, that there's a lot of people of interest. I'm sure the government would take millions of these, would take more volume of this, because it's a British company and most of the lateral flow tests, I understand, currently are being imported. They'll take it from day one, as much volume as they can, as long as they can guarantee the manufacturing is consistent and the results are consistent going forward. And this is the key. The results and the accuracy are absolutely there. And the other bit of significance, which is great, it absolutely showcases the efficacy of Avacta's Affimer and reagent technology to the world, that this works as a diagnostic, as a world-leading, best-in-class diagnostic. I mean, you can't get better publicity than this. And as I say, I think they could sell probably every single lateral flow test that they can produce because the big benefits that this says to me, and this is why I think it's a game changer, is it's got almost 100% rate of accuracy for true negatives. That's meaning, for if you're infectious, we can guarantee that you're not, you're not infectious. Yeah, that's absolutely brilliant. Okay, that allows people to go into stadiums. It's easier to use and it's quicker. I can't. What more do you need?
Yeah, and do you know what stands out, actually? The pressure now on the government to get the economy open. Did you see that Keir Starmer thing yesterday with that pub landlord?
Yeah.
Had a real go at him, saying, listen, we are safe, get out of my pub and all that stuff. You can see the anger, the pent-up anger with business owners. They want to open the economy, and this is the kind of these kind of tests would help that, wouldn't it? You know?
That was the Peggy Mitchell moment, wasn't it, for EastEnders?
Get out of my pub, yeah. But, but you can see the anger on the side of business owners that they want. They're in trouble. You know, a lot of people are in trouble. They need to get the businesses open. And this is the kind of thing that would help that, wouldn't it, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, let's be clear about it. If everybody is allowed a free lateral flow test each, you know, two times each week, that'll give them, if they've got a COVID passport, that'll give them free remit into all these establishments, because they just say that we're not infectious. You know, we can actually go around and have a meal, and we can go and have a coffee with our friends. We can go and have a drink and a beer and whatever it is safely. And you just say, you look at the UK population who could just buy the volume out immediately. Europe absolutely desperately needs it, and they've got sort of like 5-6 times more people in continental Europe than the UK. So the overseas licensing opportunities, and this is one of the significance, I think it was done at a European site, was because it then gives the manufacturers of lateral flow tests, when it comes to royalties and to licensing it out, absolute 100% confidence that they can sell it to their governments, the German government, the French, the Italian, basically the Belgium, who are really struggling, the Polish, for instance, who are really struggling, all those sort of stuff. Just give you a different, sort of sense of numbers. I mean, I think they can probably ramp up, volume into the millions very quickly. Mm. I'm just picking a number out of the air, but let's say they can do 10 million tests a month. By, I don't know, I mean, hoping they can do it anyway, but, you know, let's say by late summer, so 4 to 5 months' time, yeah? If they could do 10 million tests a month, I'm just getting the number out of the air, but broadly £5 per test, that is potentially £50 million of revenue per month coming to Avacta just in the UK for selling those tests. I don't know what the gross margins will be, but I'll be stunned if they were less than 30%. Royalties overseas and licensing, I mean, you can just pick a number out of the air on that one. It could absolutely be enormous. What royalties? 50p per test, and they wouldn't have to do anything else. They could probably sell 100 million tests a month around the world at 50p a shot. Pure profit. I don't know. I'm just picking numbers out of the air, but you can just see why this is important significant, and why the shares have rightly risen 10 to 15%, just this morning on the back of it.
It's big news, and I tell you what is infectious, Paul, is your enthusiasm for it. I like that. Of course, listen, we've got to say, listen, we don't know the figures yet, we don't know the contracts, but there's a lot of potential there, of course, if you are the best in class, and we need to open up the economy, so it's going to be quite big.
Let's just have a read across to some of your investments, and I'll only do one, okay, just as an example. Escape hunts. Yeah. This could game change their performance. This could allow people back into those venues. That's why it's important to investors like yourself that this works and gets deployed.
Yeah. Every business is not open yet, but it's hoping to open on May the 17th. You know, this is potentially, would guarantee that, it's big for all the economy.
Great.
Marvellous. Paul, thanks for that, fella, and we'll speak soon, fella. Bye-bye.
Bye. The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Glenn Goodman. He is the crypto trader.
That was the crowd.
So on Saturday evening, I was looking at the Bitcoin chart. I said, can you see anything here? I did a weekly chart. It looked to me like it needs to roll over. Very rarely have I seen the RSI, the MACD running over on the weekly chart of that, where it hasn't had a more prolonged downturn, all right? And then I went to bed. People argued me, said, oh, don't argue, you know, hodlers. I see strength. And if you look at the weekly chart, it's nuts. It's risen so quickly, so fast, you know, above all the moving averages. It hasn't been like that before on a weekly chart. And I had the usual people saying strength, you know, and all that stuff. And then on Sunday, it dropped by 15%, didn't it? And then bounced a little bit by 15%. So, So why did it sell off? There was a reason, wasn't there? A couple of reasons, I think.
Oh, the reasons. It's like the stock market, isn't it? People always come out with crappy little reasons for why things happen. Yeah. But there was nothing of true significance. This is, you know, me and you have said before, this is a chart that has not been looking, you know, hugely strong for a while now. We've been worrying about it for weeks, and we were right to worry. It is kind of rolling over a bit. It's far too early to say this is a market top because it hasn't formed a pattern that resembles a market top. But it may be in the process of forming one. I'm looking at the chart right now, and there's the possibility, for example, that it could turn out to be a head and shoulders pattern. Looking at it, I'm looking at it askance right now. There are all kinds of chart patterns like the head and shoulders that may form in coming weeks that will start to look more bearish. But likewise, if you look at it another way, just to confuse matters, it could be seen as a, let's see, rising channel.
On a weekly, I'm looking at a weekly, right?
Yeah.
And now, very rarely has, whenever it's gone, risen above, like, 80, what is it? In fact, it was above 90 on the RSI. It's never done that before. Never ever done that before. So even in the last rally. And when it's come down below 70, pretty much from that height, it's basically come down and gone sideways for a long time. And even the MACDs are rolling over at the RSI there. So what did I do? If it's top of the market, I bought some crypto.
Of course you did. That was actually the best top sign that I'd seen. Yeah, I almost sold all my crypto at the very moment that I saw Justin do a tweet saying, hey, everybody, what's a good undiscovered crypto I could buy?
Do you know what's odd?
Only you could look for a new undiscovered crypto at the peak of a speculative mania. You're asking for undiscovered gems.
Do you know what I thought was odd, though? Is that I, so I asked that question. I thought, well, I didn't get any response on that. Turns out it was such quite a big response there that Twitter didn't show me it for a while. I had to sort of look in there, and loads of people suggesting loads of stuff, nuts. But you know, this is my reasoning. I bought 10 cryptos, and I've still got them. District Coin, whatever it's called, dear, let me just find what they are, went up by 500 quid straight away. So I sold like 60%, so I sold 50% of that. This is my reasoning. I got money in the bank. I can't put it in my ISA. I only use an ISA because you have to pay tax, of course, on that and capital gains. So I got some money. It's boring just sitting in the bank. Really is just boring, do nothing. And I buy some crypto. My exposure to crypto of my total, I suppose, compared to my ISA is literally less than 0.05%, less than half of 1%. That's all it is.
Yeah.
So I bought 10 different coins. I bought Algorand or Algo.
That's a good one.
Numeria, NMR, Bitcoin, Ethereum, Anchor, New Cipher, NuCoin or NKN, Engine Coin, which is NFTs, fungible tokens, Orchid and District Ox. So I bought 10 of them, just 10% each, pretty much. And just have them there, because it's more entertaining to watch that than it is in my bank account. So I'm just going to sit there. And maybe, I don't know if I'll top up. Maybe I'll just use that money there to see how well I can do with it. But I realise right now, I think, I've been saying it for a while, it's ridiculous. The valuations of all these coins, the cheapest one I've got there, I think, is that District Ox. And that did 50%. That's still valued The market cap of that is still valued at 145 million. That's way above where I'd ever buy a stock at. And I'm thinking, what's that based on? I still think it's insane. And people seem to accept this. These companies, these coins, their valuation needs to come down by 95% before they'd be anywhere near realistic in value. And even then you could question it, you know? So we are in, really is, I think this is nuts where we are with Bitcoin at the moment and the cryptos, aren't you?
Yeah, I do. I mean, Dogecoin is a perfect example. I just gave a quick interview to for a Forbes article that was just written. Hold on, I'm just going to find my quote in this article. Give me a sec.
Yeah, no. All I'm saying is, and even I now hold. I mean, listen, I've got. It's not to earn a small chunk of money for. By any standard, really, it's a decent chunk, but it's I still think it's insane. I still think they're due a 95% sell-off.
It is. I mean, they are. Yeah, almost all of them. I mean, look, the problem is, as ever, that you can't put fundamental valuations on cryptocurrencies.
Yeah,
not
you can,
at this stage
though.
Of the game. It's far too early. No, it's far too early in their development. You can't put any kind of, not even on Bitcoin. You know, because it's. What's it being used for at the moment?
Okay, let's try, for example. Let's try even the smallest one here. We've got 145 million market cap. How do they justify any earnings at all when it's an Ethereum token that powers a network of decentralized? It's all decentralized. I don't like decentralized. I like centralized. Why is everyone banging on my decentralized? Big deal. I want centralized.
Decentralized has its benefits.
But everyone's banging on as the new big thing. Decentralized. Everything's decentralized. I like it centralized. Okay? the token is required for applications to the district registry and is useful to signal support for disapproval for proposals made by network participants. What the heck? I don't know.
Here's what I've just said about Doge in that Forbes article. I said Doge, which as of this morning is worth $50 billion. $50 billion. I've said $50 billion Doge removes any doubt that the current crypto boom is a classic speculative mania. I like speculative manias, Glenn says. I make money trading the volatility, but let's not pretend this is any kind of rational process of price discovery for Doge or for any other crypto. This is simply about people jumping blindly onto the next big thing. The true worth of every crypto will emerge in the long run, just as we see in the stock market. But in the short term, the market operates on pure hopium. By all means, have fun trading Doge, I say patronizingly to the readers. Have fun trading Doge, but I hope people take care. A lot of money will be lost very fast by people who risk too much.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm just in that little, you know, I'm in it for a bit of game here. I expect a couple of bounces. And do you know what? I should trust myself on the chart. It's going to take a lot longer because there's a lot of hype. And this is this like, you know, this tulip mania that happened before. What was that called?
The tulip crisis.
Yeah, the tulip crisis where it just popped. And everyone just and selling, as buying begets buying, and everyone's hyped. Don't fear missing out. It pushes it up, and you get all these institutions. But like you said last week, they will sell. They don't know loyalty to, you know, the institutions are not hodlers.
No,
at
they'll
all.
Be out as soon all, as they think it's
yeah,
starting to crash.
All they're about is quarterly on quarter sort of improvements. That's all they want to do. And if it starts showing, if it starts dragging down the performance of their quarterly book, they'll sell it, you know, straight away. And
I would make one contrary point to that, just regarding the tulip mania thing, which is that classic speculative bubbles like the tulip mania, they burst and then they don't reinflate. Or if they do, it's many, many years later.
Yeah.
Whereas what we've seen with Bitcoin in particular, but the whole of the cryptocurrency market, is a continual process of inflation bursting. We've had a few of those just in the last sort of less than a decade for Bitcoin. So that kind of gives me pause and makes me think, yes, there is, you know, some kind of long-term price discovery thing going on here. This isn't just a simple tulip-type mania.
No, but even when we discover that price, it'll be nowhere near the value right now, especially for most of these coins. Like, there's a, I don't know, even on Coinbase, I mean, how many are there now? And Coinbase only tend to pick up the ones that seem to be a bit more sensible and have something about
them. Something like 1,700, I think, at the moment.
Well, tradable ones. Yeah, but, yeah, no, I don't think there's that many, but there's not many that will do anything. You know, they'll go, and so I don't see how they're anywhere near these values. It's just ridiculous, and I'm part of this ridiculousness. I bought into it right now. I'm feeling angry that I'm bought into this hype. I haven't really stick my house in it, good, nowhere near, but I mean, I shouldn't have even been caught. I'm looking at the chart of Bitcoin, it's going to roll over. I'm looking, even on a daily chart, right? You look at the strength now, it's down, RSI is down at 40. It's not been down here since 20th of September, September 2020. So that was, it fell off a cliff a little bit.
Like I say, though, you could draw a couple of parallel lines on that chart right now, going back to February or so. And before you know it, you'd be looking at, you know, with a couple of parallel lines drawn on there, it actually starts to look like a bullish chart that's just having the price sort of falling back down to the support level of the parallel lines. I'm talking about upward sloping parallel lines.
No, I know. Can I just say that?
You might call like a flag pattern, something
but
like that.
You know what happens, though, is that when you get a big sell-off and it drops again, you get it's only just broken down over the 50-day moving average. No, it's not done that for, like, since a couple of years. But you get people leverage to this on you, or stake too much, or bought at the top and they stop selling, and then it starts tumbling. It's like an avalanche, isn't it? And you start getting people following other people selling, and you get all kinds of distressed positions falling out of bed here. And that, again, the avalanche gets bigger, snowballs get bigger, and it starts rolling down. I think this has got to go back down to at least 30,000 Bitcoin, tested to a moving average. And then maybe a bit of some bargain hunting, maybe.
Let's have a look. I mean, yeah, you're quite right. That is a significant break below the 50-day moving average, which, it, as you say, it hasn't done since, well, since this boom began late last year. It is significant. I mean, it's one of those situations where we're in the purgatory phase, which is why I'm not prepared to kind of call it either way, because like I say, you could at a stretch draw some lines that made it look like we're just at the lower end of a bullish range. But I'm more inclined, I have to say, to kind of be with you on this, that this chart is looking more bearish than it is bullish for all kinds of reasons. Like you say, the RSI, the moving average, just the look of the chart itself, just the fact that it appears to be constructing what could be a head and shoulders pattern, which is bearish. It's not looking great, but like I said, and did you see that tweet I did where I compared it to John Deere tractors?
Oh, yeah.
From 1936. Yeah. This was a fascinating discovery by a friend of mine, just a novice trader. He was reading Schabacher, the classic technical analysis book from the 1930s that I talk about in my book. That's why he bought that book, because he'd seen it talked about in when he read my book. And the thing about this chart that he found in there was it suddenly reminded him so much of the Bitcoin chart. And I looked at it and I've tweeted it. So if you have a look at my tweets, you'll see what I mean. It's almost identical. Mm. So it's like John Deere tractors, 1936, Bitcoin 2021. Whilst I'm not claiming there's anything weird and spooky about this, and, you know, we all know that patterns tend to repeat themselves quite a lot over time. Human psychology makes the same patterns form time and time again in ways that are kind of quite difficult to get your head around, but make sense once you think quite deeply about it. And you'll see on the John Deere chart that what happens is the price continues to fall from the point that, you know, if Bitcoin follows it, it will continue to fall from where we are now to, say, round about 35,000-40,000, and then it will just kind of meander upwards and sideways for a while. So the reason I posted that chart was just to remind people that, you know, everybody, because we're in a kind of mania phase, everybody's expecting that now either Bitcoin's going to crash or it's going to recover and zoom to new heights immediately. But sometimes a chart of that construction just simply just meanders sideways for ages. And actually, there's a reason for that, of course, which is that it's a very good way to shake out any kind of newcomers. All the people, perhaps including yourself, Justin, maybe, who have only recently started buying stuff, will quickly lose interest if the price just kind of meanders sideways for months and months. Yeah. And so that's what charts
sometimes
do.
Well, no, that's what I did last time. I made a mistake last time because I did put a chunky lot in. Last time I talked about Bitcoin, I did some videos on it. Like, I think it was 2019, and the price was about 10,000, 11,000. It did meander sideways for a while, and I got bored. But I had a bigger chunk in there then.
Yeah, and you were really into Argo blockchain.
Yeah, yeah. So I had a bigger chunk in it then. But now I don't have a huge chunk. But I thought, do you know what? I'm quite confident that, how did I say that? I don't know. That I could probably earn more money just putting my money in cryptos than in the bank account. Like next 5-10 years,
so I think millions of people are thinking exactly like you are. That's the thing. But as soon, if Bitcoin, you see, the thing is, if Bitcoin crashes now, then a lot of those newcomers, the ones who are thinking I can earn more than in my bank account, will buy even more because they'll be thinking, oh wow, it's a bargain now, it's a bargain. And if the Bitcoin price zooms upwards again, then again people will buy because they'll be going, oh, it's all happening, I've got to get in quick. But it's when charts meander sideways for months, that's when you can shake out, as I say, all the newcomers. And you need to shake out the newcomers if you want to have a sustainable big leg upwards, because you basically want to kind of clear the decks, as it were. Get, sweep it all clean, just have the strong hands in there, the people who have been holding for ages, and then you can build a base on which to build a new sustainable uptrend. That's how continuation patterns often work, which is why, you get those corrections that last for months and months and months in shares, obviously, as well as in cryptos, because they shake out those weak hands, and then you have a solid foundation for a recovery. So I guess what I'm saying is, if I were to choose between a crash, a zooming upwards, what do you call it, a rally, big rally, or a meandering sideways, I would choose the meandering sideways at the moment. I think that would be the most healthy development, and it may be what we end up with.
Well, you know what, I'm going to retweet now that chart. I did a weekly one. I said I tweeted the chart below before Sunday's sell off, and now, even though I've bought some crypto since the drop, I'm not confident looking at the Bitcoin chart. I don't know. Bitcoin, does it meander? Does it? I mean,
It has been now. It's been meandering since February, so it's been meandering for exactly 2 months now. We're at the levels that we were back in February. Not even the peak of where we were in February. In February, it peaked to like 58,000, 58,500. We're now at 54,500.
No, but it's done for a big, since the start of Feb, let's be honest, it was at literally 36,000. So it's almost doubled since Feb. It's not me.
Yeah. That was since the middle of Feb, I said, for 2 months. Exactly 2 months.
Yeah, but it's not been uneventful. For example, on 21st of Feb, it's at 57, and then it went down to 44.
Yeah, of course not. Bitcoin's never uneventful. But it's still meandering sideways, ultimately, isn't it? Look, since the middle of Feb,
I would not call that sideways. Sideways is no volatility.
It's jagged. It's like
it's gone up and down like a crazy.
I should have made it clear when I said sideways. I didn't mean no volatility. I didn't mean it would necessarily go quiet.
Yeah, but it could have gone up to a million.
It will. You'll get choppy action sideways. That's what usually happens when you get sideways, and that's actually it's the choppiness that makes everybody leave the market. It makes everybody get sick of it, and all the short-term traders throw the towel in because they're sick of trading a market that goes choppy up, choppy down, chop up, up, down, up, down, up, down, because it doesn't get them anywhere. It doesn't make them money, unless they're obviously day traders, in which case they can make money from those little chops, but otherwise, no.
Yeah, when I say sideways, I mean just going sideways, but it's in this volatile in between, so... So what I'm saying is it may drop and rally. It may drop and rally, and there's opportunity to get in and out. Most people won't, though. They'll probably just drop and they'll buy, and then it'll rise. In fact, most people don't. It'll rise, people buy, it'll sell. They sell at the bottom. So,
Here's a quote from from an article I wrote about Dogecoin, just before I forget, you know, just to hammer home that point about the $50 billion valuation. Here's a quote from the co-founder of Dogecoin, the inventor, Jackson Palmer. The two inventors, neither of them have got much positive to say about it because they made it for a joke. It was a joke cryptocurrency that just happens to now have the patronage of Elon Musk, which is why it's doing so well. But Dogecoin co-founder Jackson Palmer said, and he said this 3 years ago, he said, "I think it says a lot about the state of the cryptocurrency space in general that a currency with a dog on it, which hasn't released a software update in over 2 years, has a $1 billion market cap." So that was $1 billion when he said that. It's now $50 billion. And to be fair, it has had a couple of small software updates since then, since he said that a couple of years ago. But you know, it hasn't transformed the nature of the coin or anything remarkable like that. It's still an inflationary coin. This is actually one of the stupidest things about it, is that you know how the whole point of Bitcoin and why all the Bitcoin maximalists are obsessed with it is because it's a deflationary currency, that it doesn't, you know, because smaller and smaller amounts of it are produced all the time. Mm-hmm. So it's the very opposite of money printing that the Federal Reserve and the central banks do. But Dogecoin is actually an inflationary currency because billions of it are created every single year and will continue indefinitely to have billions and billions of it just continually be created. So it doesn't even have that kind of use case about it. Some people say it's a lot easier to trade than Bitcoin. It is, I guess. It's a lot easier and cheaper to trade than Bitcoin. So theoretically, it's more likely in that sense to become a standard currency for transactions, for buying cups of coffee and so on. People tip in Dogecoin. You know, they give tips to people on websites and that kind of thing for their content. So it could be useful in that sense. But there's a very big difference between could be useful and actually is being used by a large number of people widely. And it definitely isn't doing that. There's only small numbers of transactions being carried out with Dogecoin. And yet it's worth $50 billion, more than most major corporations. What are you going to do?
Nuts, crazy nuts. And in fact, I was saying, I said on a weekly webinar, I said about, someone asked me about some crypto-related stuff. This was last Wednesday before I bought, but I said, I think it's going to blow up. I think it's insane, just the valuations. And I said, you know, Coinbase coming to the market at $100 billion pretty much is also just, to me, suggests top of the market. But now you've found a quote of someone saying that, did you? Basically saying what I said.
Yes. It was John Authors, late of the Financial Times, now writes for Bloomberg. And he was basically saying that it kind of marks the top of the market. He was saying it's because once you start getting more excitement about the companies that make the picks and the shovels than you do about the companies that are actually mining the gold, then that generally marks the top of a market, he's saying. I'm not sure. I mean, he doesn't give evidence historically for that being true, and I haven't really heard that before, but maybe it's true. Yeah. I don't know. The guy's been around for a long time reviewing markets, so I'm not going to dismiss that idea. Is that true, do we think, that picks and shovels, that when people start getting interested in the companies that make the infrastructure? I mean, I suppose you could say it was true with regard to the internet boom, because do you remember in the dot-com boom, everybody got amazingly excited about Cisco Systems because they made the cables and the routers and all that stuff. They made the plumbing for the internet. And so their valuation went to insane levels and then absolutely plummeted.
Yeah. Well, I think... When it was everything. I remember when I first started sort of trading or investing. Trading it was back then. I didn't know what I was doing. But it was when everything just changed into .com and on the AIM market. And it would double overnight. It was nuts. And that's what's happening now. Everyone they can. Why didn't we just launch a coin then?
I should have done that years ago when people kept asking me to and offering me to and... Oh, why didn't I launch coin?
Wait for this crash to happen now.
I'm just not interested.
No, we'll launch one called the Rally Coin, shall we? and people say it'll rally, you know, or something cool like that, you know.
Moon coin.
It's going to the moon. No, it's going to the moon. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Going to the moon coin.
It's like if you call something moon coin, it just has to go to the moon, really, doesn't it? It would be silly for it not to.
We'll call it buy this crypto.
Or call it like we talked about last week.
People talk to other people.
Was it the venture that nobody shall know what it is, but to be of great advantage, yeah. Like they had in the South Sea bubble.
Yeah, but have a look. If people talk to other people, say, listen, have you had a look at buy this crypto? Say what? Buy this crypto, or it's
What did you say? I said buy this crypto.
Or the next gold. You should buy the next gold. What do you mean? the new Bitcoin.
New gold.
The new Bitcoin is what you want to call it. That's what we've got.
Better Bitcoin?
No, the new Bitcoin. So listen, it's a new Bitcoin. What is?
All right.
And then people say, yeah. The new Bitcoin. What's the new Bitcoin? The new Bitcoin is. I say, what are you talking about? You should just buy the new Bitcoin. What is that?
Yeah, just Google the new Bitcoin.
Yeah, and people say, what is?
They'll find it.
Yeah, say, what's the name of that? It's the new Bitcoin. No, but what is the name of the new Bitcoin? It's the new Bitcoin. That's what it is. Oh, okay, I got you. Right. And everyone just talked about the new Bitcoin. See? I think we've nailed on.
I think we have.
Make it super inflationary.
I think we've done it.
Yeah, make it super inflationary. And, you know, just all the wrong things. And people just say it's hilarious. I think people just buy it, which is a bit... That's the thing, isn't it? That is it.
Is
I
it?
I just realised what's going on here.
What's going on here?
When the biggest joke in the market is doing the best, it's performing, outperforming everything else, that says there's no bigger signal of a bubble than that. Can we make a bigger joke than Dogecoin, right? If you can or can't, then who knows? But it's like, if you can and it does well, that just shows it's complete farcical. Everything's farcical about this market. Everyone's taking the pee, aren't they?
I know. Well, that's why I can't take it seriously, which is why I keep buying it. And, you know, I've been in Doge. I've sold Doge. I actually even went short on Doge at the top, at its, not its current peak, because it's already reached a new one, but its previous peak, which was on, when was that? Last week, sometime on the 16th. So 4 days ago, it hit a massive peak of about 45 cents. And I sold it short and I made some good money because it fell, the price fell about 25% or more, more like 30%, 33%. Yeah, fell by about a third, initially, and then it fell even further. Then it practically halved in price and now it's recovered almost back to the top to where it was. So as I said in an article I wrote about it last week, it's when you're shorting, you've got to be damn careful. I don't short very often. And when I do, I tend to get out very, very quickly because you get these ridiculous recoveries like the one that we've seen in Doge now. So that's why I closed my short quite quickly, took my profit, and here it is back to all-time high. So I would have, you know, had I held on for a few days, I would have lost all my money. That's why shorting is so dangerous. The volatility is usually insane when you're doing a big short.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you got your Twitter open? You got it open there?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'll look at the chart there, but I'll DM you so you can get straight to it. But if you look at that tweet I just sent you there, you'll see that it's the steepness of that curve is nuts. And just how we are now tipping over into the 50-day moving average and just the thing, it's just a bit crazy. But crazy, 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 I think, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. It really is crazy, crazy, crazy.
Are you kidding?
Oh,
someone just sent me a... This is, people are insane. Someone just sent me, this is what I see, and they've done a picture. You know how you try and keep charts? Look at someone just replied to me there, right? Have a look at the chart they've done there. I like to keep charts as simple as possible. I'll put a couple of moving averages on there and an RSI. But someone just tweeted me this. What the heck is that?
What? What were they? Oh, have you just sent it to me? Let's have a look.
No, No, but someone just replied to me and click on that link that they sent to me. If you want to see a complex chart, then have a look at what they just Jarvi, right? 55. Click on that. It's like,
I see it. I see it. Okay. Oh, my Lord. That's a lot of stuff going on there. We got some Fibonacci. We got some GAN fans or something, I don't know. We've got all kinds of stuff going on there. Too much stuff.
Yeah.
too much stuff. It's not just also about the amount of stuff, but I mean, that's bad because in technical analysis, you have too much going on in your chart and it gets very confusing and you can't make any decisions. That's one of the problems. The other problem is that most technical analysis, or what people call technical analysis these days, yeah, it is. It is.
It's trying to predict.
A lot of research into these things to try and work out which things have validity and which things don't. And the fact is, the basic classical patterns, as written down 100 years ago, the head and shoulders and the triangles and all that, they have validity because they're based on support and resistance levels. And you can do any amount of back testing using past market data to test whether these things work or not. And they do. Okay, they give you an edge in the market because they genuinely, these levels that are breached with the patterns, the support and resistance levels do have genuine validity, and you do tend to get strong breakouts quite often through those levels, which give you an edge in trading.
I don't know what chart
you're
saying.
Stuff like the Fibonacci and the GAN and all the rest of it, there is very, very little, if any, academic support that they actually work. And the fact is, if they did work, you'd see any number of back tests by professionals and amateurs going, look, here is my back test over 50 years of data for Fibonacci levels, and you will see that you can make a profit using them. It's just not the case.
I think some people put loads of stuff on the thing to try and show they know what they're doing, you know, they know all these different indicators. But when I use, you know, relative strength index and all that, I mean, that's a measure of the price and how fast the price moves. So it's a real metric, you know. It's not a forecast, it's what's happening. Yeah. Now, with moving averages, that you can look at the probability of it breaking a moving average, like a 50-day moving average, for example. It's not done that since September. So that says something. That's quite significant, the fact that it has broken down a little bit. That means the trend is breaking down a little bit because it's coming over that moving average, you know? And so that's a real thing happening. When you put these forecasts on, it is like trying to predict the weather, really, without any... I mean, in fact, it's nowhere near as accurate as that, as trying to predict the weather, because they've got proper models there that look at the satellites and stuff. But, you know, it's basically fortune telling. You know, all you can go on is the metrics and what you're telling you, not what they're predicting. It's ridiculous, that. So keep it simple, you know.
Keep it simple, stupid. But that's the phrase.
It is. Do you know what? As humans, and we're finished with this, as humans, right, we are programmed, hardwired to complicate things, and the genius is in simplicity all the time. Because I keep going back to this example of Google and the search engine. Do you remember when they all flourished and they were all competing for dominance? You had Ask Jeeves, you had, you know, Microsoft Network, and all of them used to fill their page with lots of content, you know, articles, videos, whatever. You may want to see this. Google, all they had was a white page with a search bar and search, or I feel lucky, that's it. And even back, there was one button too many, probably. And they won the war because they realized that's all people wanted, just search. They didn't want a pre-populated page suggesting loads of stuff even before you search for it. You know,
want portals. Do you remember? It was always all about portals. We're creating Alta Vista is one of the world's most successful portals.
Yeah,
and it's like people didn't want portals in the end. AOL obviously was the greatest example of a portal. It conquered America. You know, everybody was using AOL, America Online.
And they give you a CD and you couldn't get it off your computer. It literally was on your computer. You couldn't get it off the software. You couldn't get it off there. It's like, bloody hell, get this thing off. Anyway.
And then
marvellous. Glenda, we'll soon see Bryce is going down. I bought at exactly the wrong time. I need to be taught, stick to me, you know, stick to what you know about. And I don't know about, luckily, I've not bought a huge amount. And we'll see.
We will see. It'll all come out in the wash. Like I say, I'm still kind of on the fence about, I think sideways is where we're heading. You don't hear that very often from analysts, do you? Sideways.
No.
I'm probably wrong. I don't know. It's just all too crazy at the moment to be going around predicting direction.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Marvellous stuff. Thanks, Glenn. Speak next week.
All right. See you then.
All right. Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Valerian Blockchain PLC, 29 pence, non-mover. At four, Sirius Minerals, that's non-mover at 14. At three, Argo Blockchain, up 4.8% to 141.5. At two, Avacta, go talk on the podcast, 10.47% up, 258. And at one, iNexus has had a good rise. In fact, it's bagged over the last 2 days. So it's dropping a little bit here. 20% there today, a bit of a sell-off, bit of profit taken. maybe a bit of market makers movement as well. Okay, time for the top five most read RNSs. They are, of course, I'm saying of course a lot. I don't know why I'm saying that. Of course, a bit silly. Five, Union Jack Oil, Wes Newton Update and Well Testing Program. At four, Director Share Purchase. That's Vast Resources. At three, Omega Holdings, Notification of Major Holdings. At two, Letter to Shareholders, Related Proposed Capital Reorganization and Notice of General Meeting. And at one, Avacta, Clinical Validation of their lateral flow test there. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.